Sports Illustrated has been sold, though not completely. Meredith Corporation has agreed to sell the famed magazine's brand and intellectual property for $110 million in a deal announced Tuesday. The buyer? Authentic Brands Group, a U.S.-based entertainment company that owns the brands of celebrities like Marilyn Monroe and Elvis.
The U.S. Supreme Court on Tuesday sent a mixed message on abortion. The justices rejected a bid to reinstate an Indiana law banning abortions in some cases, but upheld the state's requirement that fetal remains be buried or cremated. A slew of new abortion restrictions from Republican-dominated states are set to land before the Supreme Court. Alabama passed a bill outlawing abortion in nearly every case, punishing doctors that perform the procedure with up to 100 years in prison.
Mackenzie Bezos on Tuesday pledged to give away at least half of her $36 billion fortune to charity. Bezos became the world's third richest woman, according to Forbes, following her divorce from Amazon founder Jeff Bezos earlier this year. Mackenzie Bezos was one of 19 on Tuesday to join the Giving Pledge, encouraging the mega rich to give away 50% or more of their wealth.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's May 29th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for joining us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We'll hit all of the business news this morning, at least as much of it as we can before 6 o'clock. We'll also check news, weather, traffic, sports, and more throughout this hour, so stay tuned. You won't miss any of that. Also, this morning, we'll focus in on the auto industry. After 38,000 job cuts and counting in the first 6 months of the year, Dale Buss is with us this morning from Michigan, from the Detroit area, to talk a little bit about what's happening in the auto industry and whether or not this is a trend or whether we might see it reverse. He'll be up first this morning. A little bit later in the program, we're going to try again to bring you the segment on corporate boards. Illinois lawmakers looking to mandate diversity on corporate boards that are on Illinois corporations. We'll have that at about 5:38 this morning. We hope to have the sponsor of the bill, one of the sponsors of the bill, State Representative Chris Welch, will be with us at about 5:38. So stay tuned. We'll get going right now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk as we look to the stock market this morning. The opening bell will ring after a negative start to an abbreviated trading week yesterday. Stocks finished lower over concerns of a possible economic slowdown. At the closing bell, the Dow Jones Industrials was down 238 points. The NASDAQ lost 30. The S&P 500 closed 24 points lower. This morning, as we look at the futures market, again, some weakness there. A little bit of red as we head to the opening bell. Dow futures off more than a half a percent, down 169 points. S&P futures are off more than a half a percent. NASDAQ futures down nearly 65 points, more than three quarters of a percent. As we switch our focus to the rest of the world, in Asia, markets are generally mixed. In Japan, down by nearly a percent and a quarter, but in China, up just about a quarter of a percent. In Hong Kong, nearly a half a percent. And in Europe, lots of red on the screen there. In London, Germany, and France, off more than a percent. In London, down 95 points on the FTSE. That's a percent and a third. The DAX is off nearly a percent, a third as well, down nearly 155 points. And in France, the CAC is off more than a percent and a half, down about 89 points. And on the oil market this morning in the United States, crude oil at $57.84 a barrel, down nearly $1.30. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. Oil prices are dropping today as worries about the trade war between the world's two biggest economies outweigh supply disruptions. West Texas Intermediate crude down 64 cents a barrel. International benchmark Brent crude off 51 cents. Investors continue to worry the long trade fight between the U.S. and China could set off a worldwide economic downturn. President Trump said in Tokyo this week that his administration isn't ready to make a deal on with China. Apple is launching its new iPod Touch and enhanced features. With enhanced features, the iPod will include augmented reality experiences and group FaceTime, allowing up to 32 people to video chat at the same time. It'll also support all of Apple's new services, including Apple News, Apple Arcade, and Apple TV+. which launches later this fall. The new iPad Touch with 32 gigabytes starts at $199. There's also a 128-gigabyte option for $299, and a model with 256 gigabytes storage for $399. Apple taking orders now for the device, expected to be on store shelves later this week. Let's begin front and center with the auto industry this morning. The auto makers around the world have cut nearly 38,000 jobs in the past 6 months. It may be just the beginning, but there could be some positive signs on the horizon. What's happening in the auto industry? Let's bring in Dale Buss this morning. Dale is a contributor at Forbes, Wall Street Journal, and Chief Executive Magazine, a regular on this program as well. Dale, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks, Steve.
So let's begin with the bad part of that story. These job cuts that have been announced over the last 6 months or so, 38,000. Talk to us a little bit about what these auto companies are doing.
Well, what's happening is that the market, which was going strong for 10 years after the Great Recession, has finally sort of caught up with the industry in terms of the position they were in before it started, which was there was a lot of overcapacity. There was a need for the industry to consolidate somewhat. And so now that auto sales have finally leveled off at a high level, after a 10-year boom, you've got the industry in need of making some adjustments. So some of these have been really high-profile things, like General Motors' decision a few months ago to close a bunch of North American plants and lay off a bunch of workers. That, of course, was famously challenged by President Trump, but the CEO, Mary Barra, went ahead with the plans anyway. Ford, a week or so ago now, finally, the other shoe dropped there in terms of Ford deciding it was going to cut, I think, about 10% of its global workforce, including some in North America. So these companies and others are having to make some adjustments to the reality that new car sales have finally leveled off. Now, this has happened in the midst of a U.S. economy, certainly, that still remains very, very strong. So there's a little bit of a decoupling of the fate of auto sales from what's happening with the rest of the economy that we're really not used to seeing necessarily. But the reality is that these companies do have to adjust. Other big adjustments have been the fact that sedans are no longer selling. So some of the closings have had to do with that as they adjust to having more SUVs and trucks available to consumers. The biggest thing that's happened maybe as a result of all this, however, isn't just the job losses, but this announcement the other day that Fiat Chrysler and Renault are talking about a merger. And so what they're going to be doing is largely addressed at Europe, where the market is still kind of a mess. But the fact that these two companies may be getting together to create the third largest automaker after Toyota and VW is the biggest sign yet that there are major adjustments coming in the industry to deal with what's happening in the market.
Yeah, and I'm going to go back to the conversation about the job losses. We should stress that the 38,000 jobs comes from global. It's car companies in China, mm-hmm. the UK, Germany, Canada, so it's not just the U.S. On the Fiat right. Chrysler part of the story, that deal is going to save about $5.6 billion for the companies. Is that sort of a model we might see with other car companies as well?
Well, it could be. I mean, it's very interesting because Sergio Marchionne, the late CEO of Fiat Chrysler, a few years ago, made quite a stir in the industry when he went around looking for partners to merge with Fiat Chrysler. His point was there's too much capacity in the industry. We need to do something. And kind of ironically, it may have taken his death last year to clear the way for this potential deal between Fiat Chrysler and Renault, because he was such a strong personality that a lot of Europeans thought there's no way that we want to merge with Sergio. So part of what's going on is addressing his sort of long-term concern about overcapacity of the industry. But specifically, what's happening is this is addressed at a couple of things, if it happens. One is the situation in Europe. Fiat Chrysler is at 100% of manufacturing capacity in the U.S., and the reason is the popularity of the Jeep brand, the rising popularity of the Ram truck brand, those two franchises, if you will, are very, very robust and making tons of profits for Fiat Chrysler. It's actually more profitable than Ford these days, which, you know, I'm not sure that was ever the case, that Chrysler had been more profitable than Ford or GM. So that's a huge driver. The other driver here is, and I should mention, in Europe, Fiat Chrysler, or the, Fiat is operating at 65% of capacity. So that tells you there's a lot of slack there. The cost cuts are mainly going to be in Europe and kind of in combining services, not in production cuts in the U.S. The other big factor here is that Fiat Chrysler needs electric vehicles to meet the concerns of regulators in both North America and Europe. And Sergio Marchionne never really had much to do with EVs. He thought they were kind of a waste. But the company needs them. Renault has them. And so that's part of the deal as well. Renault gets access to the U.S. market, and Fiat gets the EVs that it badly needs, especially in Europe.
It's something that I think everybody in the auto industry, close to the auto industry, is going to be watching. Fiat Chrysler has more than 200,000 employees globally,
and
quite a few of those in the United States. So that's a big deal. We'll be watching that closely, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a major deal for Fiat Chrysler, and of course, over the years, Chrysler has been kind of this this package that keeps getting passed from one buyer to another. Obviously, under the days of Lee Iacocca, you know, struggled to survive, finally did. It was on its own. Daimler, the parent of Mercedes-Benz, bought Chrysler for a while. That didn't work out. Then a leveraged buyout company bought Chrysler. That was a disaster. And finally, you ended up with the taxpayer bailout in 2009. And basically, Fiat said, yeah, we'll take the body of Chrysler and it'll give us some access to the U.S. market. And things have worked out well for the company since then. So this will be watched closely, mainly for the impact on these two companies. You know, the indications are that it may not have a lot to do with the rest of the industry. It's not like it's going to prompt a wave of mergers necessarily. But clearly there was kind of a deal perhaps to be done out here, especially because Renault has kind of been pried away from Nissan lately over the troubles of Carlos Ghosn, the CEO of Renault Nissan in Japan, who's sitting in jail there. A whole other story, of course.
Talking about the auto industry, some job cuts over the last 6 months. Looking toward the future, Dale, the CEO of Daimler was quoted in a story as talking about the future and saying everything is under scrutiny. I know you've kind of touched on where things might be headed, but what are the auto companies, what are their plans in general as they move forward in the future here?
Well, they've got three things going on, I guess you would say, especially in the U.S. market. One is the priority at the moment is to try and keep the momentum going in terms of sales, you know, trying to make sure that if they're leveling off, that it's at a decent pace, and that's pretty much what's happening. I mentioned the divergence between the general tenor of the U.S. economy and what's happening in the auto industry. And so what's happening there is even though sales overall have leveled off, we're seeing continued strong sales of pickup trucks and SUVs and crossovers. Those are the high profit segments for the industry. So while things have leveled off, their profits haven't necessarily leveled off, and they want to, you know, definitely try to keep that going to the extent that they can. The other two things are a bit of more of a long-term in nature. One would be, I mentioned electric vehicles. They simply have to find a way, all of them, to continue to sell more EVs, even though federal subsidies for EVs are decreasing and actually going to disappear. State-level subsidies have been being reduced. American consumers generally don't want electric vehicles. So it's a problem for them. They're kind of spitting into the wind a little bit with that, but they have to keep doing it because of regulatory mandates. And then the other thing is they all need to be preparing for somehow establishing their platforms for the era of autonomous driving, which keeps coming at us in increments, you know, little ways here and there, but is certainly a huge requirement for long-term investment that every automaker has to be reckoning with these days.
And I'm sure there's a lot of discussion, too, in the boardrooms and the C-suites about the ongoing trade situation with China. I'm sure they'd like to get that settled, but if it's not, that's going to be on the radar, too.
Yeah, it absolutely is on the radar. The difficulty there is in figuring out exactly how much they should do, how far they should go to change their supply chains based on what, you know, clearly are short-term considerations. I mean, this trade war has been going on longer than anybody would have wanted to, except maybe President Trump. Every automaking CEO and board member knows that it's, you know, part of the art of the deal when it comes to the president. He said, you know, I guess yesterday that this thing with China isn't over. So all they're trying to do is manage the situation without having to make huge bets one way or the other and hoping that it passes soon. That's still kind of where they're at. But it definitely hurts. As long as the overall economy is strong, you know, they can handle that.
Finally, on a separate sort of but related topic, one of your more recent stories at Forbes.com is about news about Dan Gilbert in Detroit. I think a lot of people are going to recognize this name. He had a stroke over the weekend, early this week.
He did. The city has been, let's say, collectively praying for him since then. The latest word is, as of yesterday, his condition has been improving by the hour, is what one of his top executives said. He's in Royal Oak Beaumont Hospital in Detroit. He went in on Saturday. Somebody took him in. He didn't feel right. Early Sunday morning, he had a stroke, but he was right there in the hospital. So you can imagine the amount of attention and the proper care that he got, you know, as this was happening. So it seems as if the prognosis is good. In the meantime, this man, you know, clearly is recognized in Detroit as, I think I said in my Forbes story, you know, somebody whose visage is going to be on whatever Mount Rushmore Detroit ever builds. I mean, this man and his money and his passion and his just daring to turn around, especially downtown Detroit, has been amazing and has made the biggest difference in our city's fate, you know, in the last half century. So fortunately, it does seem like medically his condition may be improving. But he has sunk nearly $6 billion into downtown Detroit alone. And, you know, I think the word is out that Detroit is a coming city, a place to go and be. Millennials are flocking downtown, and so are some people like me who didn't used to go there. And it's all pretty much because of Dan Gilbert. So people are really hoping and pulling for him.
Gilbert, the founder and chairman of Quicken Loans, if people don't know, and that company's headquartered in downtown Detroit. All right, Dale, we appreciate you being on with us this morning. Thanks for all the good information.
All right, thank you.
Dale Buss, a contributor at Forbes, Wall Street Journal, and Chief Executive Magazine.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. State lawmakers are considering a bill that would force Illinois companies to diversify their corporate boards with more women and minorities. One of the bill's sponsors is with us this morning, State Representative Chris Welch of the 7th District from Westchester, on with us this morning. Representative Welch, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Steve. Honored to be with you.
Let's talk a little bit about the status of the bill. I know we're in the waning days of the session. Where does the bill stand today?
Well, actually, Steve, the bill is up this morning at 11 a.m. In the Illinois Senate. It's in the committee, Commerce and Economic Opportunity. Senator Christopher Belt from Cahokia, Illinois, is the Senate sponsor. And we have been collaborating on the bill every step of the way. And there's a subject matter hearing on a negotiated amendment with the governor's office up this morning on the bill. You know, we've been keeping this issue alive all session, and it's very much alive here toward the last couple of days.
The feature of the bill is that it would require big companies, Illinois companies, to have a certain number of women, a certain number of African Americans, certain number of Latino board members. Talk to us about what those numbers are and why it's important that the state has to mandate this.
Well, you know, corporate diversity has been proven in several research reports. Most recently, McKinsey report even demonstrated that corporate diversity really drives performance. When corporate boards are diverse, you find that those corporate boards actually increase their profits. And that's because, you know, there's voices around the table that normally aren't in the room that make people think about things they normally wouldn't think about. And they actually are rewarded for that diverse thinking in the room. And a perfect example years ago was when a car came out and it was named Nova. The company didn't have any Latinos in the room. And if they did have a Latino around that table, they would have said, hey, did you ever think that Nova in Spanish means Nova means it doesn't go? From a marketing standpoint, you don't want to tell a population of people that the car doesn't go. And so having those voices in the room adds value. And Chicago Cranes recently did a report that clearly demonstrated via the data that diversity has improved over the years, but it certainly can be a lot better, especially when you compare it to our population in the state of Illinois.
Yeah, and I think that McKinsey report that you're referring to said that culturally and ethnically diverse boards have 43% more likely to have higher profits. So that's a significant number.
That's absolutely right. And that's the report that I saw when putting this together and then doing the research and finding that African-Americans and Latinos in particular were absent in larger numbers from these boardrooms. And when you see that diversity drives performance, it couldn't hurt. And we've been driving some great debate, and I think we're going to have a great final product when we leave town this week.
The bill would require companies, publicly traded companies with Illinois headquarters, to have at least one woman, one African-American, and a Latino board member as well. I know the Tribune and some other places have done some analysis of the companies. And where women are concerned, a lot of these companies don't have a big problem there. Some of them still do. But when it comes to African-Americans and Latinos, there's a problem. These companies are going to have to do some recruiting before next year.
That's right. That's right. You know, African-Americans make up about 13% of the population, and the board representation is only about 8%. Latinos make up about 17% of the population, and their board representation is only 3.8%. And these are Illinois-based companies, and the data is Illinois specific. They can do better, do a lot better. And so having this topic in conversation all session long has already made a difference, Steve. And companies like the CME Group have added a female African-American and a Latino to their board in recent weeks. And we know that diversity drives performance, and it makes sense. So a lot of these companies are seeing the same data that we've been putting out, and they're taking action on their own. But, you know, sometimes government interference is good because it'll nudge them along. And I really do think that, you know, sitting down with Governor Pritzker and hearing his view on it as well has helped us take this initiative to another level.
Has the governor given you any indication of whether or not he would sign this bill if it passes?
Well, the governor has given us a different approach. Rather than specifically mandate one African-American, one Latino, one woman, the governor likes to force companies to think about diversity, and he wants to create an annual report card that requires the companies to report their diversity data, and they're going to be measured by specific criteria that we want to see, like women, African-Americans, Latinos, Asians, and other subgroups. And annually, the governor wants to publish a report card of those companies that meet our standards.
I was going to add that would be a significant step forward in itself, because a lot of these companies, we really don't know who's on the boards in some cases. They don't have to necessarily report that, do they?
That's right. And so the bill as filed requires a woman, African-American and Latino. That's the bill that I filed. That's the bill that we've been fighting for and pushing. But we've recently sat down with our governor, myself, and Senator Belt, and a group of business people, and listened to the governor present his approach. And he really does think we're on to the right thing. He believes in the intent of the bill. But he has suggested another approach. And that's the approach that's going to be presented in committee this morning as Senate Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 3394. And one of the things that we all agreed on, every business person in that room said, forcing these companies to annually report their data, number one, is a significant victory. But also this report card that the governor wants to annually publish to say, hey, these companies are meeting our criteria. They're putting minorities on the board and specifically listing out who, and we're gonna rate them. We're going to let them know this is what we expect, and this is who's meeting our expectations.
Yeah, because sometimes that public scrutiny is all that it takes generally when something like this happens. I know that California had a similar bill passed, and lots of folks are saying, well, if this passes in Illinois, there might be a legal challenge. What have you learned from the California law? And that one I don't think has been challenged yet, has it?
The California law hasn't been challenged. I still believe that if we take the original approach that I filed, that no company wants to be behind a lawsuit to say they're fighting diversity. But the approach the governor has suggested, several lawyers have taken a look at, and we believe the data collection and reporting mechanism and just putting this information out there, praise the companies that's doing some things, shame the companies that's not, there's nothing unconstitutional about that. And so certainly I think we're, you know, making this information public is going to get us the results that we want.
Representative Welch, we appreciate you being with us this morning. We're going to certainly watch and see how this bill plays out here in the final days of the General Assembly session.
Steve, thank you so much, and I appreciate being on the opening bell.
All right, thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
State Representative Chris Welch with us this morning from the 7th District in Illinois, where, again, we'll be watching this bill, bill number HB 3394. It's in a Senate hearing today. Representative Welch, again, from the 7th District in Westchester.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, looks like it's going to be a weak opening on Wall Street today. Dow futures are down 161 points, more than 0.5% now. S&P futures off 2.5%. NASDAQ futures off nearly 0.75% this morning, heading to the opening bell. Now a look at agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. A lot to talk about this morning, so let's get started. First of all, with a planting progress report called bullish by my trader friends at the Chicago Board of Trade. The numbers, planted corn acreage as of Sunday night, 58%. Average trade guess, 63%. Five-year average, 90%. Looking at some of the states, Illinois reporting 35% planted compared to a five-year average of 95%. The Indiana numbers, 22% versus 85%. Iowa numbers, 76% versus 96%. Minnesota planted numbers, 66%. Five-year average, 93%. Wisconsin, 46% planted. Five-year average, 82%. Soybeans planted, 29%, below the average trade guess of 32%. Five-year average, 66%. Illinois, 14% of the soybeans planted compared to a five-year average of 70%. Indiana, 11% planted compared to a five-year average of 63%. Iowa, soybeans, 32% planted as opposed to a five-year average of 77%. Secretary of Agriculture in the air and traveling again, and today he'll be stopping at places in New York. Tomorrow he'll be visiting Pennsylvania. And from our neighbors to the north, Canada will present a bill on ratification of the new North American Trade Agreement. Meanwhile, what's U.S. Congress doing? Nothing. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. A couple of more stories before we leave you here this morning. A mom-and-pop coffee shop in Santa Cruz, California, with the word cat in its name, has been hit with a cease-and-desist order from Caterpillar. The owners of Cat and Cloud Coffee say the global construction equipment company based here in Illinois has trademarked cat and is taking legal action against the shop from using any form of the word cat. He says the move is bullying since the shop's use of cat is clearly a logo showing a kitty holding a coffee mug and sitting in a cloud. Caterpillar officials maintain that they just want to protect their trademark. HP is out with a new laptop series made partly with wood. The Envy Wood series comes with what HP calls one-of-a-kind authentic wood inlay on the palm rest. They say they come in Nightfall Black with natural walnut, natural silver with pale birch, and ceramic white with white birch. Working parts of the Envy Wood Series laptops are the same as HP's full metal devices. The Envy Wood Series is due out this fall. HP will announce prices closer to the release date. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Wednesday, May 29th, the Mortgage Bankers Association weekly look at mortgage applications due out. A surge in refinance applications lifted last week's numbers. A big drop in interest rates fueled the run on refis. Mortgage applications due out this morning. Also today, we'll get the Red Book, Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index, the State Street Investor Confidence Index is due out as well. Earnings today from Abercrombie & Fitch and Dick's Sporting Goods and ExxonMobil shareholder meeting is today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, May the 29th.